us today. We have read the briefs, we are familiar with the record, and that should help in streamlining your presentation to the court. With that, I assume people against Valence Council, that's table are on people against Valenzuela. Council, you may begin.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ari Critchover, registration 37780, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant Dennis Valenzuela. I've raised 8 issues on appeal, and I'd like to focus the majority of my time on issue number 6, relating to the sufficiency of the evidence. And I think to understand this issue, it's important to understand the history of the statute in Colorado defining the crime of extreme indifference murder. And I'm not going to go all the way back to the beginning, but I think the important point of this is in June of 1981, when the Colorado legislature amended the statute in response to the Colorado Supreme Court's holding in People versus Marcy, finding that the extreme indifference murder statute was unconstitutional because it was not distinguishable from the second degree murder statute. So the legislature amended the statute specifically to add the phrase universal malice. And the phrase universal malice is the crucial factor that differentiates extreme indifference murder from second degree murder. Soon after, in 1988, the Colorado Supreme Court in People versus Jefferson interpreted and examined the new extreme indifference murder statute. And they made a couple of findings that I think are very important. They considered whether the new version of the statute was in fact distinguishable from second-degree murder enough that it was constitutional. And what the court found in People versus Jefferson was that the newly drafted extreme indifference murder statute was an attempt to return the statute to its historical roots and to insert this phrase, this requirement of universal malice. And the court found that universal malice really was, quote, the crucial factor that made extreme indifference murder constitutional and distinguishable from second degree murder. And the court considered what the phrase universal malice meant. And what the court found in Jefferson was that they interpreted universal malice to mean that extreme indifference murder is committed only if the killing conduct is of a type which is not directed against a particular person at all. By its very nature, evidences a willingness to take human life without regard to the victim. More recently, the Colorado Supreme Court in 2006 considered the extreme indifference murder statute in People versus Candelaria, which is at 148 P3rd 178. And the court reiterated what the court found in People versus Jefferson. The court first noted that murder can be committed in one of two ways. The first way is with an intent or a willingness to take a particular life. This would be first degree murder after deliberation or second degree murder. The court found that the other way is to evidence an indifference to the value of life generally, and that's what we understand to be extreme indifference murder. The court in Candelaria went on to find that the intent behind the new extreme indifference murder statute clearly requires one of two things. Either that the defendant put at grave risk a number of individuals that were not targeted, or that the defendant put at grave risk a single victim, but without knowing or caring who that victim may be. And the court in Candelaria relied in reaching that reasoning or reaching that holding, relied on a case, State versus Anderson, a Washington Supreme Court case from 1980, where that court found that extreme indifference murder, or at least the phrase universal malice, specifically excludes acts that are aimed at or intended and inflicted upon a specific individual and no other. And the other case that I want to turn the court's attention to was the recently decided case People versus Rubio, which was decided by another division of this court in April of 2009. And that case is particularly applicable because in this case we have two counts of attempted extreme indifference murder. And in Rubio, another division of this court found stated, quote, "We recognize Colorado is the only state explicitly to recognize this attempt crime, and that the concept of attempting to commit a homicide through extreme indifference or recklessness is largely disfavored by legal scholars and almost universally rejected in American law." And so I think that history and the finding in Rubio set the stage for this case, People versus Valenzuela.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. I mean, notwithstanding the language in Rubio, it's the law in Colorado by statute and by Supreme Court cases. So aren't we bound by that?
It certainly is the law, and I'm not arguing that this court should reverse because it's not a crime. Rather, I think Rubio is instructive in that it guides the court in narrowly construing the crime of attempted extreme indifference murder and construing it in a way to really confine it to really what its purpose is, which hinges on the addition of the phrase universal malice. And so I think it's important for the court to interpret that phrase narrowly in light of the history of the statute and in light of this court's finding in Rubio.
I guess I'm not, with regard to the sufficiency of the evidence, I'm not understanding what your argument is then. Is your argument that there cannot be two convictions here for attempted extreme indifference murder?
My argument today is that the conduct that was alleged in this case is not conduct which is prescribed by the extreme indifference murder statute.
So your argument goes to both counts. You're not saying that there can only be one count. Your argument is there's insufficient evidence as to both counts.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And so I think that's where the facts of this case become very important. And the facts of this case are very simple. The facts of this case is that there were the allegations, and all of this is based on the assumption that, in fact, Mr. Valenzuela was the shooter, which was very much contested at trial. But working on that assumption, the facts are very simple. There was some kind of an incident between Mr. Valenzuela's vehicle and another vehicle that contained two individuals. When those two vehicles stopped at the stoplight, Mr. Valenzuela, after some verbal exchange with both the driver and the passenger of the other vehicle, pointed a gun and fired two shots into that vehicle. And it was the testimony of the state's own witnesses, the two alleged victims, Aldo and Carlos Castillo, that there were no other cars on the road. There was no one else around. It was just their car and Mr. Valenzuela's car.
Is there evidence in the record that Mr. Valenzuela, before, assuming he's the shooter, carefully looked around to make sure there were no pedestrians, no other cars in the area?
I don't believe there's any evidence to that nature.
Was reckless. The shooter was reckless about the car, right? And then we're just shooting without regard to whether there were people on
the road. I think to the contrary, Mr. Valenzuela was based on an incident that occurred on the road with these two individuals, specifically was firing at these two specific individuals.
Well, I might, or maybe Judge Bernard might.
It would be reckless, and I do not believe it would evidence universal malice.
Okay.
I think that the way that universal malice has been interpreted, there needs to be some awareness on your part that there is some grave risk to someone other than the person that you're targeting. And the model penal code, which was relied on in crafting the extreme indifference murder statute, lists numerous examples of what would be within the category of extreme indifference murder. Things like firing a gun into a crowd of people. It mentions putting an obstruction in front of a crowded train, throwing a timber onto a crowded street. Things where there is very clearly a grave risk to a large number of people, and there is no intent to injure any person in particular.
But this was a public highway, wasn't it? I mean, he had no reason to know that given that there's no evidence that he carefully looked around to see if any other cars were passing or any pedestrians were passing, he had no way of knowing whether while he was shooting, some other people might wander along, as Jose would have every right to do on a public highway, on a public street.
That is true. And while there was no direct evidence of whether he was aware or not that there may or may not have been other cars on the road, he certainly had been traveling on that road for some distance. I think it safe to assume, as with any driver, that he was aware of his surroundings. And it was also 2:30 in the morning.
How does your argument square with the fact that his defense at trial was that shots actually came from a third car? So by his own admission, there was at least one other car around there.
By his testimony, or by his evidence, there was potentially another car there. The jury clearly did not believe that.
Mr. Christopher, you've probably noticed the clock is not working.
Oh, I actually did not notice.
And you have about 3 minutes left, if you'd like to reserve that for rebuttal.
If there are any further questions, I would take those now. Otherwise, I would like to reserve my remaining time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I might ask the bailiff, is the clock not working?
Looks like it's working here, Your Honor. Perhaps we could call the next counsel. We'll see if it works this time.
Try it again.
All right. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rebecca Adams. My registration number is 31044, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. I will also go ahead and spend the majority of my time talking about the sufficiency of the evidence with respect to universal malice and respond to what defense counsel has said. I think that while case law in this area has been confusing, following Candelaria and this court's subsequent opinion in Reynolds, which was provided by defense counsel as supplemental authority, the courts have made clear that now, even where there is evidence that shows that the defendant intended the death of a particular person, he can still be found guilty of extreme indifference murder if the manner in which he goes about trying to kill this particular person demonstrates indifference to human life generally. So the two are no longer mutually exclusive. In Candelaria, the jury returned guilty verdicts both on first-degree murder and first-degree extreme indifference murder. And the court said that while certainly we can only have one guilty verdict with respect to each victim, there was no inconsistency in rendering guilty verdicts under both offenses. So there's no problem with saying that the defendant in this case intended to kill this particular occupant of this particular vehicle, but by shooting his gun in the middle of an intersection at 38th and Federal, that he showed a depravity of human heart, that he didn't care who his victim was, and he was still endangering the lives of all of those around him. And I don't think that the defendant can argue both that he wasn't guilty because the shots came from the car behind him, and at the same time argue that there weren't any cars in the area, and therefore he wasn't putting anyone else at grave risk of death by his actions of shooting into an intersection. And again, the defendant's car was parked in one lane. There was a lane between the two cars, and then the victim's car was in another lane. So there was a degree of distance between the two vehicles. This was an intersection that's highly traveled. I mean, there's nothing to say that the defendant carefully looked around, that there weren't any other cars in the area. The defendant's own evidence was that there was another car in the area and that car was responsible for the shooting. So I don't think that there's any problem or any inconsistency with saying both, that he was intending to kill this particular person and that in doing so, he endangered the lives of anyone else who might be in the area. And I think both Candelaria stands for that proposition, and then this court's more recent decision in Reynolds, which cites Candelaria, makes that same statement. So even when there is a conscious objective of killing a particular person, the manner in which he goes about killing that person can show an extreme indifference to human life generally. So you can have extreme indifference to human life generally, and you can target specifically, and these two things are not mutually exclusive. I don't have any other comments on this particular issue. If the court has questions on any of the other issues raised in the brief, I'm happy to address those.
Counsel, let me just follow up on your points. I mean, the only evidence that there was anybody else in the area was his testimony that there was a third car, which apparently was behind him. Mm-hmm. So probably shooting to the side was not endangering people behind him. This is not like shooting into an empty stadium or a full stadium, mm-hmm. or the example I was using a few minutes ago. Since there's no evidence that there was anybody around, does that establish the element of extreme reckless indifference?
No, quite frankly, I don't think that it matters whether or not there were. The The idea is that there could be, that you're in a public place, you're firing multiple rounds into an intersection, and you don't know. Someone at that moment could pull up. Someone could turn onto that street. When you're going to behave in that manner, you're putting other people at grave risk of death, and it doesn't matter that we can't say these particular people were there or they weren't there. It doesn't matter. I think it's the way in which he went about trying to kill these other people by shooting across multiple lanes of traffic at a well-traveled intersection that showed that his extreme indifference to human life generally.
Does that mean that any time there's a shooting in a public location that there's a person could be guilty of at least attempted extreme indifference murder?
Well, again, I think that it does depend on the facts. And if you had a situation where they could show or there was evidence that, you know, possibly there was no one else around or he was shot at closer range or there was only one shot fired. I mean, I can't go through all of the possible scenarios where this might make a difference. But again, that's why this is a question for the jury. And we give the jury the proper instructions and they're given the facts they're presented and we allow them to make a decision based on the evidence presented. And in this particular case, we had a well-traveled intersection. We had multiple shots fired across multiple lanes of traffic. And I think the way in which he went about shooting this gun was such that he did endanger the lives of those around and didn't care about the safety of those other people in the vicinity.
This is not only a well-traveled intersection, this is a densely developed mm-hmm. intersection, is it not?
Yeah, this is 38th and Federal. Does the court have any further questions on any of the remaining issues? Okay. In that case, I will rest on the briefs with respect to the remaining issues and ask that this court affirm the defendant's convictions. Thank you.
Ms. Adams.
I'd like to address 2 points. The first is that the suggestion that there would have to be some evidence that there weren't other people around is in effect asking the defendant to prove that he did not act with universal malice. Ultimately, what we would be doing is shifting the burden and asking the defendant to, in fact, disprove the elements of the crime.
But if you accept Ms. Adams' theory that it's irrelevant, then neither side would have to put on evidence that there, in fact, there were specific other people around. Isn't that right? I mean, if it's irrelevant, doesn't it go more to the context where the intersection was, you know, with multiple lanes, things like that, rather than whether there were people around at all?
I think whether there were other people around is crucial, and there absolutely needs to be evidence of that based on the interpretation of the phrase universal malice.
Is there any Colorado case that imposes that requirement expressly?
I think in Candelaria, the court was clear that one of two situations need to exist. Either one, that there is a grave risk to people other than the intended target, which necessarily implies that there are other people that are around that would be at risk, or that the person who is the intended target is completely anonymous. And we don't have either of those situations in this case. The second point that I like to address is...
When you say grave risk, I mean, there's a grave risk that somebody else who wasn't there at the moment that he was looking maybe could appear, or a bullet could go off into one of the buildings, or there might be somebody in one of the buildings.
And I think at that point, we would be engaging in pure speculation about whether there were other people around or whether there could have been other people around.
Well, we're talking about grave risk, and grave risk is necessarily not certainty.
That's correct. But there can be a certainty as to whether there, if there's no one there, then there is no grave risk to anyone. And that evidence of whether there was someone there, certainly that burden to present that evidence certainly can't fall on the defendant. And the second point that I'd like to address briefly is the statement from the Attorney General that this is a matter for the jury to decide, that this is why we instruct the jury properly. And this ties in to the other issue, another issue that I raised on appeal, and that in fact, in this case, the jury was not instructed properly. In this case, the phrase universal malice was in the instruction defining the crime of extreme indifference murder. It was not in the instruction defined in the crime of attempt. There were two definitional instructions. There was a general definitional instruction, and there was an instruction defining the various states of mind. The phrase universal malice was defined in the instruction with the general definitions. Nowhere in the instructions was the jury ever instructed that the phrase universal malice is a state of mind that the prosecution is required to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. If there are no further questions, I would ask that the convictions be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kreischer, and thank you, Ms. Adams. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.